T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
The show kind of stinks.
Kick it!
All right, hello. And a good Wednesday afternoon. It's good to be with you.
It's like 90 degrees out.
I think it's 63.
It is so nice.
It is a nice day.
Like, I thought about raking leaves, and I didn't, but I thought about it. It's that nice out.
It may have crossed your mind, but... How was your night, Dana?
I didn't sleep at all, Scott. How was your night?
Mine was fine. Slept like a baby.
Didn't sleep at all? What happened?
Nope.
What happened at your house?
How's Chris's recovery going?
Oh, it's going.
Because I remember asking about that, I think, at the beginning of either yesterday's show or Monday's. And, man, you would have thought that they lived in a house of flowers and rainbows. Oh, it was going so well over there.
I am so proud of him. His recovery is amazing.
Absolutely.
Except that I have not slept in a week.
Aw.
He's up and down a lot.
No, wait, you didn't include this in the description on Monday or Tuesday?
The rehab, you know... He's up and down a lot. And, you know, I'm a worrier. So when he does get up, I'm worried he's going to slip and fall. I'm worried he's going to, you know, I keep saying in the middle of the night, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And he's fine. But, you know, it's like sleeping with a toddler. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, we've uncovered some video that you recorded earlier today just to update everybody on not Chris's condition, but more Dana's condition.
Happy Thursday. This
not
is just a quick
Thursday.
Video.
Stop.
Shout out.
Stop.
It's not even Thursday.
I didn't even realize she said happy Thursday.
I told you I haven't slept in a week.
Start it over.
Happy Thursday. This is just a quick video to shout out any of you who have ever been a caregiver for any length of time, because we're a week into my husband's recovery from knee surgery. We're not even a week in. Actually, tomorrow would be a week, and I'm exhausted. I am exhausted. In the middle of the night, he knocked over his ice machine, but there wasn't ice in it. It was just like 3 gallons of water, and I jumped up, you know, and I cleaned it up, of course. But then the cord came undone, so he almost killed me. I was almost electrocuted in my own bedroom at 3 o'clock this morning. It's like having a 6'2" toddler in my house, and I'm exhausted. And I'm so happy he says that he's 15 degrees away from being able to bend his knee like the normal way, right? I don't even know what that means. I just know that I haven't slept in a week and I'm exhausted. And I need you to send help. Not for Chris, for me. Send help. I have revoked his bell privileges. Revoked.
Okay. You don't sound well in that video.
I said to him today, I go, I've revoked your bell. I'm revoking the bell. And he goes, you can't take my bell. And I go, oh, I'm taking it.
So it's not as happy on the inside as you let us know it is on the outside.
I'm just goofy, crazy tired today. I am in a crazy, goofy, I've not slept all night mood. I'm so happy he's doing so well. But you know this, if anyone is living with someone who's gone through knee surgery, you know, it's a process. It's a lot of up and down. My first and only tip to you is don't give him a bell.
They have revoked his bell privileges.
Speaking of Channel 9, we will talk with the great, amazing Michael Mahoney.
Legend.
Legend Michael Mahoney coming up later in the program. If you missed the announcement, he has decided to retire after almost 41 years covering the news in Kansas City. 41 years. I am 47 years old.
It's pretty remarkable.
It is the most remarkable career, and Kansas City, when he retires, is worse for it, but I am so thrilled for him because he has earned this retirement.
Yeah, I'm going to relay with him when he gets on. He's coming on in the 5 o'clock hour,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. I doubt he will remember this, but it was the first time I had ever met him, and it was in Houston, Texas, of all places. And I had been sent down there as a young reporter to cover the sale of the Royals to David Glass.
Oh.
I had no idea where I was or what I was doing. And I was petrified. And a reporter from Channel 9 by the name of Michael Mahoney was also there. And what he said to me not only calmed my nerves, but helped me get the story. And he didn't owe me a thing. He owed me nothing. And it speaks to his character. He's a good cat and a good friend of the show. Michael Mahoney will be joining us coming up after the 5 o'clock news. We do need to get to this breaking news story, and it is sad and tragic and every other word you can think of. A fourth student, a 17-year-old boy, died today from wounds that he suffered when a sophomore opened fire at a Michigan high school yesterday. The other dead students include a 16-year-old boy who died in a deputy's patrol car on the way to the hospital. 8 people were wounded, some critically, including a 14-year-old girl who was placed on a ventilator after surgery. Investigators are still trying to determine a motive for the shooting yesterday at Oxford High School just outside of Detroit. Deputies rushed to the school around lunchtime yesterday as more than 100 calls flooded 911 with reports of a shooter. They arrested the student in a hallway within minutes of their arrival. He put his hands in the air as deputies approached. We'll get into this a little bit later in the program. The boy's father, on Friday, bought the 9mm used in the shooting. He did not know. Authorities say they do not know why the man bought the handgun, which his son had been posting pictures of and practicing shooting. Authorities did not immediately release the boy's name, although we do understand it has been released within the last hour.
He has been charged as an adult.
Good.
Charge his parents. I want them both charged. They should be in prison for the rest of their lives. End of story. And in Michigan, it's actually possible to bring charges against mom and dad. And the prosecutor came out within the last hour and said they are looking at what charges are appropriate. And she did not say whether charges are appropriate. She said they are looking at what charges will be appropriate. Throw the freaking book at all three of them. I cannot even talk about the heroic efforts to save that junior football player, Scott. I can't even go there. The sheriff's deputy threw him in his car and tried to save him. And this is personal to me. I said this online last night. My youngest son was 6 when those children were slaughtered at Sandy Hook. And my oldest daughter is a graduating senior this year. And the fact that we can somehow mark our children's time frame in school based on the school shootings that they've understood and heard about And also, Scott, the fact that we have somehow gotten better at the response since Columbine. They had him in custody, I think, within 3 minutes. But how sickening is it that we're somehow celebrating in a macabre way that everything was done right here and they did it so well? Textbook, Scott. This was a textbook law enforcement response.
There was an officer at the school, resource officer in the school.
Was there within seconds, and we still have, as of right now, 4 dead. But that girl is clinging to life on a ventilator. And I just am so sickened and so saddened. And then in the middle of all this, we have to continue to have this ongoing educational conversation about whether or not our students should be hiding or whether or not we should tell them to run. And at the end of yesterday's program, if you were listening, I said I'm not going to give advice on what your children should do, but I want my kids to run. I want them to get out of there. And a good friend of ours texted me and said, I wonder if you should maybe clarify that. I don't know in all cases if that's what we should be telling them to do. And then I just get upset that we're even talking about this. Right. But we do have a nationwide expert on school shooter training that is going to join us here in a couple minutes, because here we go again.
Yep.
Do you run? Do you hide?
What do you do?
You know, there's a heartbreaking quote from one of the survivors of this shooting who said, "We all grabbed scissors because that's what they had available to them in this classroom to fight."
And that audio that we played yesterday of someone knocking on the door saying he was a sheriff's deputy, and the students are like, "Well, we're not ready to come out yet." And he goes, "Come on, open the door, bro. I'll show you my badge, bro." And then one student said, "That's a red flag right there."
Run.
He said, "Bro, everybody get out." They have confirmed that was him. That was the shooter pretending to be a sheriff's deputy.
And the teacher that decided to keep that door closed saved all of those kids' lives. And so Doug Parisi is going to join us here in a moment. He is a 20-plus year law enforcement veteran who is now the director of training for a company called Safe Defend. And he goes to schools, sadly and sickeningly, and tells teachers and students, this is what you're supposed to do when this happens. And we will ask him, do you run? Do you hide?
He's on the hotline. He'll join us next in just a moment here on Dana and Parks. Welcome back. Story that just cleared from the USA Today. The 15-year-old student accused of opening fire on his classmates at a suburban Michigan high school, killing 4 and wounding 7, has been charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder and terrorism. His name is Ethan Crumbly, 15 years old. He is being charged as an adult. He will be arraigned this afternoon and could face life in prison.
His parents facing charges possibly today as well. The arraignment is later this afternoon. We will cover that when it happens. I want to read this one sentence here from USA Today before we bring in our guest. Students described a chaotic scene as a voice came over the intercom to announce an active shooter. However, some didn't know at first whether it was a drill until teachers started rushing to lock and barricade doors and cover the windows. And I want to talk about that because we're going to bring in Doug Parisi here, who is the director of training for Safe Defend. He is a former police captain. He had over 20 years of service, has been involved in active shooter situations, and now trains classrooms, sadly, how to act in these situations. And Doug, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
It does seem like a lot was done right yesterday by the school, and there will be time to deconstruct and reconstruct everything leading up to the shooting. Tell us what they did correctly.
What they did correctly was prepare for this. They had their procedures in place. The teachers knew what to do. They had practiced this. They had done drills in the past. They got law enforcement involved in those trainings, and that's what we need to make sure that we do. Let me just caveat something really quickly. There's 144,000 schools in the United States. this happens in about 15 to 25 of them per year. So the probability of this happening in your school is so infinitesimally small, but what you have to understand is because it's possible, we need to prepare for it.
You saw the video, or at least have heard about the video that we were mentioning just prior to the break that surfaced late yesterday afternoon of the students and a teacher. They had barricaded the classroom. They were huddled down low in the classroom, and there is a knock on the door. And someone says, it's the sheriff's department, open the door. It's the sheriff's department, open the door. And the teacher, or I believe it was the teacher, who said, we're not ready to do that just yet. And he says, come to the door and you can see my badge, bro. It was as chilling as any video I have seen in a long time when you later learned that that truly was the 15-year-old shooter at the door, knocking, impersonating a sheriff's deputy to get access.
It was disturbing that was part of his plan. One of the things that we do have to remember is the FBI has told us that no active shooter has ever breached an interior locked door. So they've come through a side window, but they've never breached that side of the door. But the most important thing is that the teacher did it right and that they weren't able to, you know, they knew it wasn't time to open that door. Understand, this is going to take a long time for law enforcement to establish a perimeter, set up and secure the location, maybe evacuate injured. But they're also going to have to clear and make sure that it's safe to start putting people in those hallways and evacuating them. This could take like 30 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour. The other thing, too, is that law enforcement has direct access to people, the staff within the building, so they're going to have keys. The general protocol is that law enforcement would knock on the door, advise you who they were. If there was a PA system, they would say, we're going to evacuate room 212, and the next thing you know, you'd hear the door unlocking. So the teacher did it right there. What I also want to if Parkland, we had four classrooms where the students were trapped without a teacher. If you're ever in doubt, just call 911 and say, hey, we have an officer at the door. We're not sure if it's really him. If you could have him say the word Jabberwocky or use a code word, and the next thing you know, if you hear that the officer at the door saying that word, then you know that that person's in contact with dispatch, and they are most likely a law enforcement officer. But what I would tell you is that most of the time, law enforcement will have access to that building without you having to open it.
I want you to repeat the first sentence you just said, Doug, because it's incredibly important. The FBI says an active shooter has never breached a locked door in one of these situations.
Correct. It just takes too much time to try and break through that lock. This isn't a cartoon where you can kind of shoot them out. If you shoot a doorknob, you're just going to disable it, and it's not going to be able to disengage the tumbler. And so there isn't enough time for this to happen. Understand that what just happened in Oxford, the shooting was over with in 4 to 5 minutes. We don't have the exact timeline. We believe the shooting started at 12:50. The first 911 call came in at 12:51, and I believe the suspect was in custody at 12:55. But what was important to remember is all of that damage was done before law enforcement ever got in there. And law enforcement did not hear gunshots as they entered that building.
Got it. And here's why I asked you to repeat that an active shooter's never breached a locked door. As a parent, I panic yesterday, and you want to say to your kids, get out of there, run, get out the window. Why didn't they get out of the window first, those kids who were hunkered down, when that suspect started banging on the door? Do you tell kids now to hide, or do you tell them to run?
Well, when you said that, I was one of those people that cringed at you because, you know, your ears were probably ringing.
It was, and I said this was my, as me, I would want to run, but we're going to correct the record right now, Doug.
Right. So in a tornado, you go to the shelter. In a fire, you go get out of the building, you evacuate. In an active shooter situation, it depends. It depends on how close you are to the shooter. Generally, I would tell you that if you can hear the gunshots, it's probably not safe. Because if your child doesn't know which way to run, they might be running right towards the shooter. But here's the most important part. As we just saw in Oxford, these teachers are prepared for this. They practice these crisis drills. And so if you're telling your son to get out and the teacher is trying to lock that classroom door down, we might have a situation where the barricade is not being established. There was a study in Idaho that came out about 6 weeks ago, and it showed that the safest place for your child is behind a locked classroom door. Now, let me caveat that. I'm talking a normal classroom door with cinder block walls with no windows and things like that are exposed to the hallway. If you have one of these science labs that, you know, big open windows and everybody can see what's going on in there, there's no such thing as a barricade there. There's no such thing as barricading in a gymnasium.
Right.
There's no such thing as hiding cafeteria. That's a clear run situation. Run till you can get into a barricade where you can get a door separated between you and the shooter, or run from the building. But if your teacher is telling you to get in the safer corner and get that door locked and get the lights out and be quiet, that hands down is the safest thing. And parents should not contradict that. The most important thing parents should do is ask, what is your teacher telling you?
Doug,
and that's what you need to know.
We're up against the news here. Can you stick around for one more segment? Because we want to ask you, in this day and age, do most schools or all schools have this now good locked door since all of this crap started a few years ago? If you'll just sit tight, we'll get to more of Doug Parisi here in just a moment. He is the director of training for Safe Defend, and we appreciate your time, and I can't wait to hear more.
News is next here on Dana and Parks.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just...
So it is with a heavy heart that we announce that a fourth student has died in Oxford, Michigan, and a fifth, as Dana said earlier, and it is true, sadly, is clinging to life on a ventilator. The suspect is a 15-year-old sophomore, and he has been charged as an adult with four counts of first-degree murder and terrorism in Michigan. He faces life in prison if he is convicted.
This is just critically important information, and it sickens me that we have to talk about it again, but it's too important. And so we invited Doug Parisi into the program today, a former police captain. He's been an officer for more than 20 years, has been in an active shooter situation, and is now a training director for a company called Safe Defend, and they basically go around the country and train teachers and schools how to deal with this exact situation. And I'm going to repeat it again, Doug. The FBI says an active shooter has never breached a locked door because so many parents, and I was included here, asked when I saw that video yesterday of those kids hunkered down in hiding, why didn't they run? And I want to get back to the door in one moment. You said even if an active shooter shoots at one of these doors, they're not going to get in. They're going to break the tumbler. It takes too much time. Do all schools now, with the federal funding that we saw rolling in the last few years, have good locked doors?
I wouldn't say that they all do. Let me just give you a little short little history here. One is you have to think that across the country we have different buildings. Like Parkland, it was 13 different buildings. So
right.
They were connected by little walkways. And Alabama and Mississippi, we literally have classrooms that that look more like motels where the students can step out as a car parked right there. So in Las Vegas, we have open-air classrooms and stuff like that. So we don't always do the same thing. What you also understand, like Kansas Public Schools, they have the Safe Defense System, which I'll talk about in a second. But their classrooms have been built over so many years that back in the 70s, we used to have these open-air classrooms
yeah.
where they really didn't even have doors and all like that. So it all depends. So when you ask that question, understand the biggest aspect of this came from Sandy Hook. Because in Sandy Hook, in order to lock the door, the teacher had to step out into the hallway, insert their key, turn it 180 degrees, then turn it back, take the key out, and then step back into the classroom. You can't use fine motor skills and critical thinking in a crisis like this. And so that's when the Department of Education standards said that if children are in the classroom, the standard of care is that the door should be locked. That's when schools started looking at how to do this. The other thing you have to worry about is that there were, in Parkland, like I said, there was four classrooms where the teacher was out of the classroom at the time the lockdown occurred. So the students have to be able to lock that door if the teacher isn't away. And that's why we really encourage the push button thing. What's
yeah.
hard is there's also a window on that door. Because now I don't even have to breach the door. All I have to do is break that window. That's where we come in and talk about how to do things like set threshold protection and stuff. And that's where those students that were talking about having scissors and things like that. If a hand comes through the door, you don't have to stop the intruder. You just have to stop that hand. And that's where the spine of a book, a computer monitor, anything that comes through that window should be prevented from grabbing.
But you're saying no windows on doors, which makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Or very narrow ones, or ones that are far enough away that an arm couldn't get to the doorknob, yes.
Yeah, not to harp too much on this video, but it's such an...
In the moment.
Yeah, in the moment, personal view of what was really happening yesterday. And one thing that shocked me, quite frankly, is now that we know that this person who claimed to be a deputy was, in fact, the 15-year-old suspect, is how calm he was, how... He didn't sound frantic. He didn't sound excited. And I don't mean excited in a good way, of course, but he was amazingly calm. Just open the door. I'll show you my badge, bro.
Yeah, it is scary to think, and that's where we don't know enough about the shooter. If you know, there's mental health issues, there's, you know, like sociopathic tendencies, things like that, that might play into that calmness. And so we really don't know what's going on. One of the things that's very interesting about this scenario, though, is he ran out of victims because they were so successful at getting that classroom locked down and the entire hallway. So then he was on the prowl for more. What we have to look at is that, like, why Safe Defend exists. It is a great thing that they got on the PA, but then if some of the students heard it, some of the students heard some other students yelling active shooter, and then they got on the PA system.
Yeah.
But this needs to be more automatic. We would never expect someone in a fire to pick up the phone and try and get on the PA, run the hallways yelling fire, and call 911 at the same time. But somehow when you're being shot at, we keep having this notion that that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what Safe Defend is all about, is we have a system that teacher puts their fingerprint down, and all of a sudden it's literally doing three things simultaneously. It's alerting, it's putting off sirens and strobes throughout the building so everybody knows what it is. So there is no, is that a drill or not? You just hear the
right
sirens, you know to get into the classroom. It's sending text and email alerts to every staff member so they know where the threat is. And this comes down to your thing, Dana, about whether or not to run. Wyandotte High School, if something happened down in the cafeteria, that's on kind of the lower fourth level. Well, if I'm at the front of the building or the south or the north side, maybe I do go for the exit. But if I'm at the third level, by the time I try and get all the way down and get out, I might encounter something, so I'm probably going to stay locked out down. That's the information teachers need. But more importantly, in these huge high schools, text and email alerts are going out to law enforcement and dispatch telling specifically where in the high school they are located, like classroom, you know, 412.
Yes.
But it's also telling them which entrance they need to go to, so they don't always run to the front office. Maybe they go to the northeast loading dock because that's the closest entrance. And we push all that information out in just one quick text. And that's where schools need to start saying is, it's great that you have surveillance cameras and access control and all that, but those don't stop
at... No, that's reactionary.
Right. The FBI tells us that 86% of active shooters are school students that start in the building. The other 10% are people that have access to the building. This is former employees. This is domestic relationships, things like that. And these are what we're looking at, is that only about 4% of the people are actually stopped by the access control. So when you talk about active shooter security, the first thing you need to say is notification. Am I getting law enforcement notified and building occupants? Dana, you and I have had talks in the past, and I can tell you the number one thing I can do to prepare you is to let you know you're under threat, because then you can take those steps that you need to lock the door, turn off the lights to do that, or evacuate, or prepare to protect yourself. But if you don't even know that the threat is there, like what's the third floor, it happened in Parkland,
sure,
those people got ambushed because they did not ever get an alert. The fire alarm went off, unfortunately, because of some of the dust and the gunpowder. They came out of their classrooms thinking it was a normal thing, and they got ambushed. And that's what we got to do, is work on the notification. This was a great response by law enforcement, but as I said, they got there 4 minutes after being notified, and the incident was already over. The shooter gave up, and
right,
they never heard gunshots because weren't there in time.
Doug, as I mentioned, there are going to be weeks and months ahead where we learn more and kind of reconstruct what it was that happened here. But one of the things that struck me that the sheriff said last night during his news conference was that this particular shooter fired 12 shots and hit 11 times, not necessarily 11 victims, but connected 11 times. What does that say anything to you? And if so, what?
Proximity to shooters. There was I'm blanking on it, but there was the California shooting that happened. Unfortunately, five people lost their lives in that. And it was the same thing. The perpetrator was literally on top of the people. There was a group of people talking, and he just walked up. So proximity would be the thing. Same thing with Marshall County, Kentucky. The SRO that was in the building was out directing traffic, and it wasn't until students went screaming, but you had 16 shots there, two killed, and I believe it was all just based on walking up into a group.
Got it. I only asked, Doug, because even the sheriff said, and I think you would agree with this, studies will show most police officers in a crisis situation would not hit 11 out of 12. And that's just a fact.
Yeah, it's one out of six. Cops hit about one every six, five, and believe it or not, after about eight feet distance, that's about where everybody's at. In a situation like this.
Doug Parisi, do appreciate your time, your expertise. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Scott and Dana, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Be well. Dana said earlier that the prosecutor in Michigan is considering charging the parents, and I'll paraphrase you. You said, I hope they throw the book at them, something to that effect. The text line, several people wrote in, charge them with what?
Oh, we're going to break that down.
And we will. Let me read to you from the USA Today. Authorities say the teen used a handgun that was purchased by his father on Black Friday, just days before the attack. McDonald, that's the prosecutor, said her office was considering criminal charges against the suspect's parents. And this is the important part, and this is the part that I agree with you on and with the prosecutor. She, McDonald, the prosecutor, she said responsible gun ownership was crucial to helping stop such tragedies, and those who do not do that should be and will be held accountable.
There is a law apparently in the state of Michigan. We would have to look at what the laws say here, where there is case law here where these parents can be charged. And it is if someone under the age of 18 gets their hands on your unsecured weapon. Clearly this was unsecured.
Clearly it was.
And there were a couple of other points that had to be true for there to be charges. We are so reactive when it comes to this thing. We're not going to stop irresponsible gun ownership. It's not going to happen. We're not going to take the guns away. That's not going to happen. Really, at the end of the day, all we have is to throw the gun owners in prison. I'm sorry. If they somehow allowed this child access to that weapon, bye-bye.
The suspect's father bought the gun on Friday, as I mentioned. The teen appeared to post images of the gun online days before the shooting. Undersheriff Michael McCabe acknowledged there were rumors about warning signs and said that they were being investigated. At least one parent telling the Associated Press her son was not in school over fears that something could happen yesterday. He just said to me, "Ma, I don't feel comfortable. None of the kids that we go to school with are going today."
When we come back, I want to talk about See Something, Say Something and the limitations of social media. Even if he posted a photo with this gun, the limitations of what law enforcement can do, even with a minor, Scott, when that happens.
576-7798, Sam Stevie the Third, Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. Unlike most talk radio programs, the hosts of this program, when we give you what we believe to be incorrect information, like to correct it.
It just happened while we were talking.
Well, I had been watching the news all morning, and it seemed to me that it was clear that the person knocking on the door, claiming to be a sheriff's deputy or police officer, was in fact the 15-year-old shooter at this school in Oxford, Michigan. While we were doing the interview with Mr. Parisi, the sheriff's department or police department held a news conference and confirmed the exact opposite, that indeed was a police officer at the door who said, "I'll show you my badge, bro."
Which, by the way, goes against, I believe, some of their own protocol. But in that frantic situation, they got most of this right, Scott. And yes, there were rumors that something was going to happen. I guess there was a severed deer head placed outside of the school that had everyone up in arms within the last week. The sheriff says that had nothing to do with this.
Right.
Let me tell you this. Even if there was a photo of this idiot with this gun on social media, let's just say he posted a photo, okay?
Yeah.
Just a photo of a kid with what appears to be a weapon, in most cases, is not enough to make some arrest. Now, could you go to the high school and say to a counselor, "Hey, there's some weird post with this kid"? 100%. But even a 15, 16-year-old posting a photo, this is what I have been told from a police officer, posting a photo with a gun, unless you are explicitly threatening someone, there's not a lot police can do there, Scott.
It's not a crime.
Is it a real gun? Is it an airsoft gun? Is he meaning to threaten you with it? Or is he going outside and playing target practice? I know people are saying, "Well, why didn't they say something? Why didn't they do something?" We don't know that something wasn't said. And I don't know what these social media posts look like, but unless he was specifically threatening somebody, on what grounds would they have arrested him, Scott?
Bob in DeSoto. Bob, hello.
Hey, Dana, glad to hear you're back. I've been wanting to call and ask you some questions. Hey, I hear a couple weeks ago you guys spoke about children getting vaccinated and what age they should be responsible enough to.
Sure.
And you were saying that you think 15 and 16 is an age where a child should be able to make their own choice when it comes to vaccine. Also, with that being said, at 15 or 16, I think most people would trust their child. That's usually when children start learning about hunting, et cetera. So leading into that, why do you think both parents, I called last week again, that both parents should be charged with life in prison?
I don't know if anybody said life in prison.
I said lock them up and throw away the key because that's just what I believe we should do. But that's not the world that we live in. There is a specific Michigan law that would allow them to be charged. And if that is the case, I have no reason to doubt it. The governor has quoted that law. The Gabby Giffords Foundation has quoted that law. I have no reason to believe that information is wrong. If it is the case that they can be charged under Michigan's law, do it.
I actually, I believe the parents should be charged as well.
But why with life in prison?
I don't think anybody said life in prison.
I was just saying lock them up and throw away the key. They're not going to get life, unfortunately. They're going to get to watch their son grow up, unlike the four families that will never, ever get to see their children again.
Do you not – hang on, Bub. Let's turn the question around. Do you not think that the parents should be charged?
I think there should be some – I think they should look into why a gun was purchased 4 days before a shooting happened. But, it's not out of the normal for a 15-year-old male to, be around guns. I mean,
But, Bob, first of all, this was a handgun, though, and most people don't hunt with handguns. Responsible gun ownership and this kid's mental state, not even withstanding in what I'm about to say, and there are some serious questions about his mental state in the weeks leading up to this shooting and things that he may or may not have written online. But the very fact that a 15-year-old boy, with or without some mental problems, was able to have access to a handgun in the home
with three magazines
and be able to just take that handgun out the front door of his own parents' house and go to school tells me that that house is filled with irresponsible gun ownership. And I'm a gun owner.
And I would like to think, Bob, responsible gun owners would agree with everything Scott just said. You don't want someone like that giving you a bad name, I'm guessing.
No. But, I mean, you also got to consider a 15-, 16-year-old, that's when kids are starting to get into things that they shouldn't be. And, I mean, you can have a hidden key and a locked gun safe, and your child's still going to find it. I mean,
yeah, but I have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old in my house, and I have a gun in a safe, and it's going to be damn hard for them to open it this afternoon because the key is in my pocket.
Well, just out of curiosity, if something was ever to happen, a home invasion, I'm not at all wishing that upon you. Wouldn't you want your child to have access to that, though?
Not when you look at the statistics of what actually happens in those situations, Bob. No, that's my opinion, but no.
Okay. I mean, I do not have a child yet, but I would love at the age of 15 or 16 for them to be able to protect themselves if a home invasion ever happened.
Okay.
Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard said that authorities learned today that on the morning of the shooting, I hadn't read this, Scott, the suspect's parents were brought into the school and had a face-to-face meeting with school officials. This is from the Washington Post. School personnel also had a meeting with the suspect for, quote, behavior in the classroom that they felt was concerning.
He was a known quantity.
Parents were in the school that day
because
of his behavior. Lock them up.
Quick break for the news here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.